Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Janny.
I'm Praz.
Hey, Praz. There was drama this week around that FPL deadline with the Merseyside derby being postponed early Saturday morning due to Storm Dara. So there was no Salah. So many then captained Palmer. They were rewarded with 36 big ones. But those that went Saka, almost as many did, saw another blank. We've got to speak about Brian and Mbeumo because he was sold en masse. And you had him and he rewarded those that kept the faith with a big haul as Brentford, but also Chelsea, Forest, Bournemouth, Villa and West Ham all picked up 3 points. I mean, how was your game week, Praz? Mbeumo owner, Palmer captainer, you must be pretty happy.
Yeah, it was a good week. I had Isak as well, so it was looking good actually on Saturday. And then, you know, not much happened apart from the Palmer captaincy after that. Now, Palmer captaincy was huge. We'll talk about the ripple effects of the Liverpool game getting postponed, but 75 points for me. I'm off to a good start this year, 25K now. Wow. So it's been going all right, but a lot of luck. How was your game week?
Yeah, not too bad. I think around 60 odd points. I mean, I didn't have Mbeumo, but those that didn't, many of them had Bowen. They got big points. And many of them, if not, had Bruno. I had Bruno. So I was happy with my 9-pointer there from Bruno Fernandes. I just have a red card, though, from Rico Lewis. He gets his goal finally. You think you're going to get big points from your Man City defender. And then he goes and gets sent off. But no, Palmer captain, I'm very happy with that decision. And I got a Solanke goal. We'll speak more about Spurs later in the show. But Praz, I guess we've got to start with that match being postponed because there was chaos around the deadline. I mean, what were the big implications of their no Salah and that Liverpool game being cancelled?
I mean, I think there were huge implications given how the end results panned out. Because first, let's look at transfers. Like a lot of people were looking to buy Trent. And I was one of those people. How was I going to buy Trent? Sell Mbeumo to a four-day defender up to Trent. So I ended up not selling Mbeumo because obviously Trent wasn't playing. So that's the first piece of luck or swing. I think the second one is everyone that I know was captaining Salah. So then when Salah is not in the equation, you start talking about, is Saka good captaincy? Is Palmer good captaincy? And then the third element is some people didn't realize that the game was off. You know, the folks in the US or, you know, the early waker-uppers in the United Kingdom or Europe, they basically missed the fact that the game was off and maybe left it on a vice-captain, hadn't given it enough thought and ended up getting a vice-captain on somebody they didn't actually want to captain.
Yeah, a load, I think, moved the armband. So yeah, Palmer, Saka, Haaland got more attention than you'd expect. And obviously he's produced a goal, but I think only a 7-pointer. We saw FPL Family Lee. He was tempted to captain Ollie Watkins anyway. And then the news of the Salah postponement, straight away you go, actually, I can have a little bit of fun with this. I will go with an Ollie Watkins. You know, we'll speak about Villa, but you know, Watkins was obviously benched and then obviously got the 1-pointer. So it was a week which was quite swingy, but managers felt like they could go and have a punt because there was no Salah in the game. And it did make me think, boy, this game can sometimes be better with no Mo Salah because it's come really easy in the last few weeks. Captaincy's just gone there. And actually, maybe we do need to think outside the box a little more because the likes of Palmer, they're delivering.
Yeah. And actually, the one final thing was also benches, right? I mean, a lot of people, you know, some people had to use transfers to basically work around this postponement, while others who had deeper benches, who any who had benching dilemmas, just said, you know what, I'm going to bench Salah, I'm going to keep him for the week after. And that sort of worked out nicely.
Yeah. We had a lot of teams with probably a Salah and, say, a Van Dijk or a Salah and a Trent and a Mikalenko. So straight away, that's three players out of action. And if you've got a guy that's injured or suspended on your bench already, like a Gabriel, then yeah, it was a problem for many. So yeah, the chaos is good though, right? As engaged FPL managers, we should welcome chaos because it just means later in the season, we're then one step ahead to react to things like double game weeks.
Absolutely. And I think if you've saved your triple captain, Salah getting a double game week, that's beautiful news. Now, I've used mine, so that was one of the things I was thinking about. But look, I think I got enough luck out of Mbeumo playing instead and things like that, so I'm not going to think about it. But if you do have your triple captaincy, it just looks very nice. Whenever that double game week falls for Liverpool, Salah triple captaincy is definitely on.
Yes, we'll speak more about triple captaincy and chips on this podcast throughout the season, guys. So make sure you're listening out. But in short, Liverpool's participation in the EFL Cup final could be crucial. If they get to the final, then you could see that double game week on a small double and therefore triple captain is very likely to be used on those that have it for Mo Salah. So look, should we kick off with Spurs-Chelsea? I feel like that was one of the biggest games of the weekend, biggest scoreline, Cole Palmer show, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And very impressive, Chelsea. I mean, after going 2-0 down, that game could have gone anywhere. But, you know, credit to Maresca, the way they They changed their shape a little bit. I mean, they do play with this 3-box-3, but then the personnel kept changing. It was Enzo alongside Palmer. Second half, it was Cucurella, who was actually almost playing a number 10. It was adaptable. And that's one thing that you can't say about Spurs, because, you know, this is not the first time they've let go of a 2-goal lead. And it was just a game where Chelsea grew into it. And even though on paper you'd say it's 2 penalties and did Chelsea deserve it, I think watching the game, Chelsea definitely deserved the win.
Yeah, the Chelsea formation and personnel is really interesting this season. And we've seen Maresca use a few different sort of systems. But at the moment, what we're seeing is it's almost a back three in possession, a bit like Pep plays at Man City, with then one of the fullbacks being inverted into midfield. So, you know, at City, we're used to seeing, say, a Rico Lewis stepping into midfield. Well, at Chelsea, we've seen Caicedo lining up as a right back, but still playing his defensive mid role, because on the ball, he's in those central areas. But we've also seen the likes of Gusto playing the role, Cucurella playing the role. And actually, Reece James out of this Chelsea team doesn't give the manager such a headache. It's quite an easy solution without Reece, who, of course, is in that first 11, but often injured. And Enzo is one of the big beneficiaries, because in a midfield where you've got Lavia and you've got Caicedo already, Enzo doesn't have to play one of those defensive midfield roles. And in the last 4 game weeks, we've seen Enzo wearing the captain's armband. We've seen him taking half the set pieces, but we've also seen him scoring goals and getting assists. And Enzo is getting a lot of love in the FPL community, and rightly so now, because if you want a bit of that Chelsea attack outside of Palmer and outside of Jackson, then Enzo feels like a player that we can invest in as a 7th or 8th attacker, because he's so cheap.
Yeah, 4.9 is ridiculous. I mean, I think now he's 5 million. It's just a great price. And people have to, you know, manage expectations with picks like Enzo. I mean, you have to think of him a bit like, you know, Xhaka 2 years ago at Arsenal, or Gundogan 3 years
Good
ago
comparison.
At Man City.
Yeah.
So those guys are basically like the 5th attacker. The manager has said, look, you have defensive responsibility, but if we are attacking, then you can join the attack. You can be that 5th guy who comes into the box. And we've seen a lot of his goals come that way. Mm. But many games we saw in the second half where he did have defensive responsibility. So I think it's the price that is appealing about Enzo. It's the minutes, because I think as long as James is out, and that seems to be the, you know, until January. So there will be a lot of games that will come through. And if Caicedo keeps playing this inverted right back, then there is a space for Lavia and Enzo. And for the role of this attacking 8 that Enzo is playing, I like it. He's also on corners. We always like set pieces. So, you know, spoiler alert, I got Enzo last night, and that's something that will afford other moves as well. So there's many reasons to look at this cheap midfielder that's emerging.
Yeah, it's who that enables. If you're selling an Mbeumo or a Bruno, you go down to an Enzo, then yeah, what can you do in defence? Does that allow you to buy a Trent, for example? So yeah, we'll talk about Liverpool and premium defenders later, but Trent and Arsenal defenders are going to be of high interest. Praz, go on, give us a little spoiler alert. Is that Enzo move to enable a defender elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, look at the defences. I look at most people's FPL teams and the defences are absolutely in shambles.
Yeah,
I mean, people are still running with Mikulenkos. I have Pinnock myself. Terrible fixtures going ahead. Ait Nouri is okay, but he seems to be conceding 2 or 3 goals every game. Then you've got Gabriel, who's not showing up for games. So, you know, the defence needs some love. And I think, you know, who better to get than the most attacking defender in one of the best defences in the league, Trent?
Yeah, nice. Well, that Chelsea attack, if you do want to invest in it, you don't gain huge points when Cole Palmer hits halls because everyone owns him. A fair few have Jackson, and that's a nice secondary route to the Chelsea attack. But if you want to consider a third Chelsea attack or a different, cheaper Chelsea attacker, then I think Enzo, perhaps over the wide men, purely because we'll see a bit of rotation with Pedro Neto, who's suspended. He's picked up 5 yellows, but Sancho too, and obviously Madueke coming in and playing every now and then. So Enzo feels like a nice option, but that Chelsea attack is so good and worth doubling up on. First for goals so far this season, out of all Premier League teams. Second for big chances. First for expected goals. They've scored 35 times in 15 league games this season. No one beats that. So absolutely see why many want to double up, especially given the fixtures over the festive period. And outside the other big teams, like, they don't have Champions League football. They have European football on Thursday night, where they get to rest Cole Palmer. He's not even in the squad for the group stages. And they're going to get to play a B team. So they're fresh every weekend. And we're seeing the advantages of that now.
Definitely. I think you made a great point about fixtures. I mean, have a look at their FDR on the website, and it's a sea of green until 20th of January. So definitely think about adding a second or even a third. And I don't even mind their defense. I know the defense has gotten a little bit of criticism. They keep conceding these big chances, and they do concede every single game. And you have Sanchez, who's making mistakes. But I don't mind a Colwill, even a Sanchez. What are your views on Sanchez, for example?
Yeah, I don't mind Sanchez. I just feel like if he has one or two really bad games, he could be dropped. I don't feel like he's clearly first choice, but I don't feel like he's absolutely a set and forget in that position. And I think eventually Maresca will place him, probably not till next season. But if he has a couple of clangers, he's not a guaranteed starter like, say, a Colwill or a Cucurella, you know, can have a bad game, but they're clearly going to keep their spot. So I think I probably prefer one of those guys to a Sanchez. But yeah, I mean, Chelsea defence isn't as bad as perhaps people make out. And with the fixtures they've got, you can see some home clean sheets there. Yeah. I mean, one defence that is bad is Spurs. We should touch on them.
Yeah.
They're still an exciting attack, though. So how do we feel about the likes of Solanke and co? Like, do we still want to stay invested in a Spurs attacker knowing they've got Southampton next? But you just don't know what Spurs are going to do. They had Ipswich a few weeks ago, and, you know, I captained Solanke in that game, and he blanked. They're just not a reliable team, are they?
This is the issue, that you can't rely on them for a fixture run, right? Yeah. They could win against Man City and lose against Ipswich. So and that's the issue. They're competing with other picks in their price brackets. Mm-hmm. So Son is competing with a Saka and a Palmer. Solanke is competing with an Isak who keeps delivering week on week, or even a Jackson with great fixtures. And then you say, do I really want investment here when there's other options? That's where it's tricky. I don't think the attack is a bad investment. I think if you have one of those guys, you may consider. I think Son becomes more difficult by the day, as long as, you know, Saka and Palmer keep delivering. But Solanke, I think he's an okay hold. They have Southampton this week. And then after that, you know, okay, there's Liverpool. But then it's not too bad. I do struggle with their defense, though. I have all season. Like, I had Poro most of last season because there was this thing of, you know, defenders getting bonus. This year, they've lost that a little bit because once they concede, that's a negative BPS action. And so that makes Poro even less appealing, even though he keeps getting an odd attacking return. He's basically an expensive 8 Nouri. Now, you know, with all due respect to Poro, it's not that great. And I would, you know, Van de Ven and Romero were back, but then Romero was again injured. And now we're hearing that he could be out for, you know, a few weeks. So that'll impact their defense even more. Vicario's already out. So I just wouldn't touch their defense. And in their attack, it's more a case of keep if you have, otherwise don't invest.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Let's talk Man United, because that's another attack that's looking good, but defense that's perhaps not. And it was a great game, United 2, Forest 3. And it was pretty balanced. But I guess the two players that get the headline for Man United in terms of FPL interest, and I think we knew this a month ago, we knew this 2 months ago, perhaps, or certainly off Amrim's announcement, that Ahmad would probably become a good option that could play wing back. We've seen that, and he is. And Bruno Fernandes would still be the key cog. It's interesting we're seeing some early subs for Bruno. We think he's had a 65 and a 75 in the last three, which we didn't see under previous managers. But when he's playing in that number 10 role, Bruno, and he's part of the front two or front three, he's a really desirable FPL pick, isn't he?
He is very much so, and not much has changed, but I think I want to be cautious with all Man United picks, and I've been saying this since Amorim came in, because he's still trying things, right? I mean, what we have learned is in this 2-10 system, so there's an attacker, there's 2-10s behind. The only attackers he's preferred there are Højlund and Xerxes, and they're going to rotate constantly. That makes either of them a non-option. Mm. Then in the number 10, he's got Garnacho, he's got Rashford, he's got Mount, he's got Bruno. So while Bruno will play a lot of games, he'll pretty much start every game. He's not going to play every game in the 10. Then you're going to have Bruno playing in the pivot, which is not as great, right? Then you're saying, I'm spending all this money on this midfielder who's basically joining in the attacks, basically the Enzo role. So it's not ideal, but it's still Bruno. So he still has free kicks. He still has penalties. So you could still invest in him. I'm not saying he's a bad pick, but he's not going to play number 10 every single game week. And that's my main issue with him. The other pick, which you allude to, is Ahmad. Ahmad has been incredible. He's got 5 assists already in, I think, 5 games. And that, you know, he probably is the best right wing back in the system. And he looks to be nailed. But again, in the Amorim system, we've seen Euro came back. Euro had his first start. He was exceptional, really good defender. Not an FPL defender, but for, you know, in real life, really, really good. Then you have Mazraoui and Dalot. So there could be games where Mazraoui and Dalot could play the wingback roles. So does Ahmad long-term join the number 10 and make it even more complicated? Or is it a case of Ahmad just nails down that right wingback spot? I'm still not 100%. So I would just say wait on any Man United picks.
Yeah, I must admit, I was looking at buying Ahmad this week just because I'm shopping for that fifth midfielder. It's between Enzo and Ahmad. And I think after what I've seen at the weekend and just seeing Chelsea attack so well and be more reliable in terms of just pure shot volume and goals, I'm probably going to go Enzo. But Ahmad, certainly in terms of individual positioning on the pitch, he's often the third, fourth most advanced player on the pitch for Man United, sometimes even higher than that. And he's been super involved and super important to Amrim. I look at the starts he's had. I think the only league game he's not started under Amrim was the Arsenal game. You're down at halftime, 45 minutes on the clock. He looks at that bench and he goes, Ahmad, you're the guy I'm calling on to come on and try and change the game. He didn't change the game and United were poor against Arsenal. But interesting to see the faith the manager is putting on him. The one game he was rotated, he's on as a halftime sub. He feels to me like someone that's going to play all those games. And we've seen at Lisbon, he, with his wingbacks, he's happy to use one fullback on one side playing wingback, but he's also happy converting a wide man, a winger, to the fullback role. And from all of United's wide men, it feels like Ahmad is the only one he trusts playing in the wingback role, and he's absolutely thriving there. So I do really like Ahmad. I just think that attack still isn't perhaps as well functioning as, say, Chelsea, and therefore maybe Enzo's the slight.
And he's been ruthless, Amrim, in terms of substitutions, yeah. Right? He loves a pre-60 minute substitution.
With defenders.
And he loves energy, right? So if he basically will do it, and over the Christmas period, I just feel like I can only give people advice. They're free to do what they like, but I wouldn't touch Man United picks. Let them play a few more games, look at them in January. They'll be a settled team by then, and then, you know, there'll be picks there.
Yeah, fair enough. We got to give a mention to Chris Wood-Praz. He keeps doing it. We see the fixtures and we go, oh, we could probably offload a Chris Wood, but he still scores goals.
You know, there's this gif which is, he can't keep getting away with this. That goal was all, you know, it was windy conditions. He just loops a header. It just goes in. Onana has no clue. Before this, he gets a penalty. He's basically averaging one shot per in the box per game for all this run of five games that he's had in the last 5 weeks. But he's still come out with goals. And I just don't know how to stop him. Maybe I just need to buy him.
Yeah, it's crazy. He has been phenomenal this season. Yes. He's absolutely one of the FPL stars of the season so far. And all, as you say, off pretty underwhelming underlying stats, like the XG, the shot volume. It's not been super high. But what he has been, to be fair to him, is really efficient, as have Nottingham Forest, to be fair. Fulham Arsenal was an interesting one. We nearly saw a late winner, didn't we, from Saka, which changes everything. Because if Saka scores that header, he gets the winning goal. He gets bonus points. He gets 5 points for the goal. And straight away, if you've captained Saka, you're looking at a 9 or 10 pointer. Instead, you're looking at a 2 pointer. It's fine margins, FPL, isn't it? Just from that Martinelli toe, your FPL points, you could lose 8 points if you've captained him. You could lose 16 points just off one small VAR decision.
It's tricky. Yeah. I mean, and you know, we have to sort of try not to get too down with these things. I mean, I own Saka. I hadn't captained him, but even owning him, like I see people not having Saka and I go, you know, you just got away with this because he's their best attacker. Like, it's not Havertz. The guy taking the shots, the guy creating the chances is Saka. And then there's this narrative of Arsenal are creating very little XG from open play. Most of it is coming from set pieces. Well, who's taking 50% of the set pieces? It's Saka. Yeah. They're getting goals of penalties. Well, who's taking the penalties? It's Saka. So I just think, even though there is this, and it's true, that Arsenal are becoming a defense-first, safety-first team, let's keep it down to a 1-0, 2-0 kind of thing, which is fine, Saka's still a great pick. Like, he is their attacking, number one attacking pick. I think, if anything, it impacts Havertz, Odegaard a little bit, because those guys get impact. If they're going to score one goal, probably it's Saka who's involved.
Yeah, and with bonus points, you're competing with your teammates as well. And Saka does so well with all the underlying creative stuff that if he returns straight away, he's on for 3 bonus, which then hinders your Havertz bonus points, your Odegaard bonus points. I mean, how do we feel about the Arsenal defence? Because for me, it's always been, has been for a while. It's Saka and it's the defenders. They're the Arsenal players you mainly consider. Sure, we flirted with an Odegaard or a Havertz, but at the moment, they feel like non-events. Do we prefer the Arsenal defence or the Liverpool defence? If you're shopping for a premium defender, I mean, you and I are eyeing up Trent, but if you don't have an Arsenal defender, do we feel like they're a more reliable source of clean sheets over the festive run, or do we still back the best defence in the league season so far, which, to be fair, has been Liverpool?
Yeah, I think, look, there's not much in it. These are two, clearly the best two defenses in the league. They both have a good fixture run. And so I don't think you can go too wrong. Then it gets into individual names, right? If you're talking Trent, I mean, for me, he then, good defense, most attacking. Now, you may, jury's out whether this season it's been the case or not. Some games it is, some games it's not. But by and large, he's still the most attacking, route to points. He takes corners, takes set pieces or direct free kicks. So I like him the most, but he's the most expensive. So it's priced in that way. I think the next, you could argue it's Gabriel or Van Dijk. Pick your pick, in terms of who is the right player, because both have that goal threat in terms of corners, and they're always going to be in and around goals. And then you get to the next tier, which is basically your Saliba's. And I'm not putting Saliba in that same tier because Saliba is not usually the same goal threat.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of luck. I mean, that Man United goal, Saliba knew nothing about that goal. It hit him on his backside. So he's fine, but I would still put him on the next tier. So Saliba would be there. I would even say when a fit Konate, he would fit there. Timber, you could argue, would be there, but I would still say Timber, he's not a very long-term pick. At some point, White will come back. At some point, Califeri will be fit. Then there's a goalkeeper discussion, whether it's Alisson or Ryan. I think that's a 50-50.
Interesting point on Saliba, because we'll see two goals in two games and feel like you just go and buy him, but he often isn't the beneficiary from set pieces. It is Gabriel who they look for, and Saliba's had one off his bum, and actually the goal against Fulham, like Havertz is heads that ball and is going towards the back post, and Havertz is it's an attempt on goal, and Saliba just happens to be there to tap it in. But really, Havertz should be scoring that himself. So yeah, it's fortunate for Saliba owners. Two goals and big points when your defenders are scoring.
Right.
What makes me think about Trent is he started the season fairly slowly by Trent standards. I owned Trent for the first couple of months, and it was fine, but I wanted more. And I did wonder, under Slot, are we going to see him playing within himself? Is there an injury there? Is it a tactical thing? But the last couple of games we've seen from Trent, he comes on and gets two assists last time out. The game before that against Man City, I think he hit the post and was really attacking. So maybe we're seeing either a slight change in system or just Trent actually back fully fit, raring to go. But were you encouraged by those two performances? Because he did look a little bit more attacking, didn't he?
He did, but I am also pragmatic in the sense that it's, a bit like we were talking about Chelsea. Managers do change setups depending on the opponent. Yeah. So I will not go in every game thinking Trent's going to get an attacking return this game. It is a different setup. Slot is a lot more pragmatic. So I would say he's a good pick. Maybe he has slightly, lower assist threat than he's had in the Klopp era, but then that's counterbalanced by the higher defensive or clean sheet probability. So I still like him. He's still 7 million, which is an incredible price for him, especially if you consider the fact that Saliba 6.2, Van Dijk is now coming to 6.4. So, you're comparing him only about 0.6, 0.8 to other defenders who have very limited attacking threat apart from the corner. So I still think Trent is the best pick of the bunch.
Yeah, I'm there. History tells us he is a phenomenal FPL asset. He's a 3 assists this season, no goals yet, but I'm sure they're coming, especially with his ability to shoot from range. And the Liverpool fixtures look good for goals too. Again, a bit like with that Chelsea attack, saying Palmer's perhaps not enough. Well, is Salah enough for the Liverpool attack? We're probably not buying a Gakpo or a Diaz or a Darwin. Although Jota is back in training, eyes on him for the next few weeks. It's going to take him a while to be back in the 11. But Trent gives us more cover in that attack, which is a great attack.
Exactly.
A good attack, but a not great defence is probably Man City again. Like we talked about good defences. In years gone by, we've always spoken about Man City as a top two defence. This year, it's clearly Arsenal, Liverpool, and City are nowhere near. Like they're a bottom half defence at the moment, aren't they?
They are, and it's just the fact that they are giving up a lot of big chances, which has been the case where Rodri has basically shut them down and not converted a transition into a big chance. And they're just not able to stop it this year. Whether that is because, it's just Rodri, or is it, Walker has lost some pace and he's not able to stop the counters, or it's just injuries. They obviously, it's a combination of all of these things. But the fact of the matter is they're not a reliable defense this year. They have always been, one shot, one goal, a bit like what Arsenal did this game week where, Jimenez has one shot and that's conceded. But typically they do, you can still rely on a few clean sheets, but this year it's very difficult to predict. And, it's a case of either you go for Guardiola who has good attacking threat, or you just go very, very cheap and just hope for Rico Lewis to start and then he gets you an odd goal, which was the case this game week. But then you get a red card as a string attached to that.
Yeah, I can't quite comprehend how Man City have gone from being a team that concedes one big chance a game, and often that was going in, which was frustrating for managers. I know you had Edison for the run-in last year, and they were really good at the back, but then kept conceding those one-goal games in games they were winning 3-4-1. But now they're conceding 4 or 5 big chances a game, and a couple of them are going in. And that the impact of no Rodri clearly has the impact on the chances conceded and therefore the goals conceded. Or is it maybe more than that? As you say, there's other areas that are flagging: Walker's pace, injuries in the back line, whatever. But yeah, they look vulnerable to the point where, you know, Pep doesn't often change goalkeepers. Well, Edison's come out the team. De Bruyne's back though, which helps the attack. And Haaland scored at Selhurst Park, but again, like, the attack's good, but it doesn't feel like an attack where you need to be spending 15 million and captaining the guy up front every week. So do we look at that festive run and go, if you've got a Saka, a Palmer, a Salah, they're your three premiums, you're very happy, you're probably not looking to change that for a while. And if you have those three, you're clearly not going to have an Erling Haaland as well. So for the first time since he's been in the game, we're pretty comfortable not owning the Norwegian, aren't we?
We are, until he scores that brace or a hat-trick, which, yeah. You know, his fixtures, now, not to scare anyone, and I don't think a lot of people will go for him, but game week 18, he has Everton home, 19, he has Leicester away, 20, he has West Ham home, 21, he has Brentford away. We've seen how many goals Brentford concede. Mm. And he has Ipswich away in 22. So that 5-game-week run actually incredible. But I think there is a case now that managers have sold him, they've spread the money, and they're happy. Like, you know, I haven't seen one unhappy Haaland seller so far. Yeah. And it may change, but I think whenever that happens, it will happen. People will just need to hold their nerve and say, look, I have got three other good players. Like you said, if you have your Saka, Palmer, Salah, I would even say if you have a semi-premium attacker, could be Watkins, could be Isak. If you have a premium defender, could be Trent, could be Van Dijk, could be Gabriel. I think people are generally happy. So yeah, that's where we are in the FPL landscape.
I held him far too long. I just couldn't see that he was going to... I saw the underlying numbers, all the high XG, and was like, no, I'm going to keep the faith. But it meant not having Salah for weeks. And it pretty much killed the start to my season, or the first half of my season. But I'm looking at it now going, I'm so happy I sold him a couple of weeks ago and I've got Salah in place. But no one's getting Haaland back in one move. Probably two moves will be a stretch. You need to be saving those transfers if you want to get him back. But then you also need to be willing to sacrifice a Salah, a Saka, a Palmer, or maybe even two of them, which feels crazy at the minute. What we probably need to force our hand is a suspension or an injury or a huge dip in form, which I just can't see from one of those three premium midfielders.
And to add, like, even if you did go for a Haaland, from game week 23 onwards, in a row, they play Chelsea, Arsenal, Newcastle, Liverpool, Spurs. All five in a row. Wow. So at some point, now again, Haaland can do well in those teams, we know that. But if you're spending, let's say, three transfers to get Haaland in, then you're going to be spending two transfers or three transfers to get him out. Is that six transfers worth it for maybe a couple of game weeks? Maybe I think game week, and now we're getting way too far ahead, but game week 20 is the only obvious captaincy for Haaland. So it's tricky.
Yeah. How well did FPL do with the pricing of Haaland this year? I keep looking at that example going, well played. Like, I was gobsmacked when he came in at 15. I didn't think he deserved 15 from the season he had just had. Good, but not that good. But now the fact he's 15, it gives us that question all the time, which I think is just brilliant. It'll be really interesting to see where he is next year, depending on where he finishes and if Salah outscores him, which is looking likely at the minute. Should we move on to some of the other teams, Praz? Because we've spoken about many of the biggest. Palace deserve a mention, didn't they?
Yeah, I think Palace are getting back. I mean, you heard Glasner in the post-match where he was saying, look, we're gradually improving in our structure. I think him working out that Sarr and Eze behind Mateta is the way to go. I felt he was a bit pressured to go for a Nketiah because they signed him and Kamada. And so he felt that this is what I need to do. But I think Sarr and Eze behind just works. Mateta playing every game 90 minutes works. And that also helps them at the back. Hughes is fit. Wharton is fit. And I think that helps them in midfield. I just think it's a team that's getting back. I can see a lot of people investing in Palace from game week 19 onwards. Their fixtures are really good. So just something I wanted to shout out as well.
Yeah. And the wingbacks, like, very few teams play with wingbacks. We spoke about Man United, but Munoz and Mitchell, they offer you the attacking threat that a lot of fullbacks don't. And we saw when Glasner first took over, he can be a good source of clean sheets. When the fixtures turn, attacking returns on the menu for Munoz, can, 2-2 he's just had. Don't expect him to maintain that sort of standard. But I think we'll get some clean sheets too. And he's had some price drops. Started the season at 5 million. He's now like 4.7, 4.8. Yeah, he'll be back of interest very, very soon, I think.
Agreed.
Where do you want to go to next, Praz? We've got a couple of more games to touch on, and we still got to go on to the Brian and Bermo chat as well.
Let's do a Bermo in Newcastle then.
Yeah, nice. I mean, so many sold him, and it was a tricky sell because you knew home fixtures are good for Brentford. And Newcastle were poor on the road when they went to Selhurst Park the week before. Another trip to London. I mean, they weren't bad in terms of shot volume, Newcastle. And look, Brentford would always give you shots, 16 shots for Newcastle, but 4 goals for Brentford, and they create big chances, big XG. Vissa and Bermo, they're the big beneficiaries, aren't they?
They are. It's a good team. Like, there is a reason why Mbeumo is the fourth, you know, people talk about Salah, Palmer, Saka. The fourth midfielder in FPL by points scored and underlying data is Brian Mbeumo. Penalties, set pieces, 90 minutes. We love the guy. There's a reason why he's highly owned. But at some point, you need to start thinking about what next? Can I do something else? Can I use that money somewhere else? When you have Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool, Brighton away as 5 of the next 7, it becomes a case of, yes, you can hold, but also if you want to sell and use that money somewhere else, you can do that. And I think that's where we are as sort of where Brian Mbeumo stands.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think because of his price point and there's other players we can move to, it's fine to now sell him. And the exit point is away at Stamford Bridge. That's a game we probably don't expect too much from Brian Mbeumo. You expect that to be a Chelsea win. This is slightly different because he's so cheap. You can maybe keep him in tough fixtures and he can play part of your 7th, 8th attacker rotation if you need. I mean, Vissa, since he's been at Brentford, he was kind of in the shadow of Ivan Toney a bit. He wasn't a guaranteed starter, but this year he's really stepped up as the main goal threat in this team. And he's clearly, I remember speaking to a Brentford coach years ago when Toney was in the club, and he said to me, Vissa's the best finisher in this football club by a country mile. All the players know it. All the coaches know it. You watch them in training and Vissa over Toney all day long in terms of finishing ability. And we're absolutely seeing that now. He is clinical, isn't he?
He is very good. And my only issue with Vissa would be that he is competing. The cheap forward options, like, we are blessed this year. There's so many good cheap forwards with good fixtures, a lot of them on penalties. They don't deliver every week. Now, we've seen that with the likes of Cunha, João Pedro. But if you have managed expectations, I think there's a lot of options in that price bracket. We talked about Chris Wood already as well. So I think he's a good pick. But again, given fixtures, given that Thiago was back, I mean, he got a start. Yeah. So could we see Thiago starting and they go back to the Toney system where Thiago is the one up top, Vissa left, Mbeumo right? It just dents the appeal a little bit more. And then the fact that he's not on those penalties, I just think if you have him, it's not urgent to sell, a bit like Mbeumo. But if you can move him on eventually in the next couple of weeks, maybe wait for the Nottingham Forest home game in game week 17, maybe it's an exit point. But I do agree, he's a good pick.
Yeah, Kevin Schader as well, scoring the goals. He was benched because Thiago started and still got on the score sheet. So again, there is competition for places now everyone's fit. With the Thiago being back fit, you could see that eating to Vissa's minutes. But nevertheless, we know the talisman in that club, it's Brian Mbeumo, and he's still, of course, a good pick. What do you make of Newcastle, Praz?
I think it's a case of FPL, how you think of Newcastle versus real life. So real life, very disappointing result. But they are, they are that team that they give Liverpool a game, but then they lose to Brentford. That's how they are. A bit like Spurs, but you can also say Newcastle are more predictable in the sense that Newcastle at home, great. Newcastle away, don't have a lot of expectations. And that's where we are with Newcastle, I think. Now,
the next two, though, for Isak. I know you're licking your lips on that one. As an Isak owner, you're one step ahead there.
I mean, Leicester at home, Ipswich away, Villa. I would even say Villa at home because, again, for the home form, I just like the fixtures for Newcastle a lot. And I think there will be a reaction. Home game again. Leicester are there for the taking. I mean, Nistelrooy has joined, but from a defensive point of view, not a lot has changed. They're still leaky. Ipswich away, they always are, they were trying to hold on against Bournemouth, but it didn't work. And I can just see goals there as well. So I think Isak is a great pick. I think Gordon could be a good pick. He was rested this game. And I think he will come back and play a lot of these games over the Christmas period. So I like Isak and Gordon a lot.
I do. We both started the season with the pair. We both had double Newcastle attack to start, and that's clearly the two FPL picks in that team. If you can't get to a Newcastle attacker this week, don't always look at it and go, I need every single player. You can't have them all, guys. Like, I would love Isak so, so much, but I can't have Trent and Isak, and I'm probably going to prioritise Trent. So whilst the next two fixtures for Newcastle are amazing and Isak could get big, big points, you can't have them all, and we've got to remember that.
Indeed.
And we also need to remember Newcastle aren't the most reliable team. Like, if there's a 1-0 win in one of those games where you expect a 3-0 win, you're not going to be surprised with Eddie Howe's Newcastle at the minute. Brighton, João Pedro, he's getting the chances. I mean, he's been a real popular punt for the budget forward since he's been back. We haven't seen big returns yet, but I guess they're coming, are they?
Yeah, fixtures are still good. I mean, for the long term. So I would not worry about João Pedro at all. Like, I see people sort of getting panicky. One return in three is not amazing, but it's not the end of the world for a 5.4. And I mean, now he's 5.9, but a lot of people got him on the cheap. I think you just keep patience. He is on penalties. He will get the odd penalty. His minutes are improving. Now, he's getting 70-ish minutes now, but I think over the, you know, as he gets fitter, early season, we were seeing he was playing a lot more minutes. So I think they should only improve. Palace at home, Brentford home, you know, there's a good fixtures coming up for him. Even West Ham away is good. I think for the long term, you don't worry about João Pedro. There's other strikers that we'll talk about, let's say a Wolves that we will come to, that maybe become a sell in a couple of weeks, but João Pedro you just keep, I think.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, Leicester scoring goals under Van Nistelrooy, aren't they? Like, they're seeing a bit of new manager bounce there. How do we feel about Vardy, for example?
I mean, he is, again, one of those that is great value. He is 7 attacking returns in his last 8 appearances, which is incredible. He just keeps delivering, and it's very difficult to say why he's a bad pick. I have no single reason to say why he's a bad pick. It's just that, do you trust Leicester over Brighton when you're comparing João Pedro to Vardy, even though Vardy is completely outscoring João Pedro at the moment?
We have to manage our expectations, you're right, with the budget forwards. Like, you can't expect something every week. You've got to remember what you're paying for these guys. But also, we don't like to use transfers there. One, because they can sting you in any game. Like, João Pedro can pop up and score goals against the top teams. We've seen that earlier this season. Yes, we're spoilt for choice. We've mentioned so many already this pod, but, you know, we've just another two there in João Pedro and Vardy. Cunha's another one. Like, just because he's blanked for a couple of games, he shouldn't necessarily be a sell. I mean, Wolves have still got good fixtures, right?
I mean, you have to always look forward, not look backwards with these attackers. And you, when you think Cunha has also, by the way, Ipswich and Leicester in his next two, absolutely don't sell. Don't sell Strand Larsen. Now, Strand Larsen is a different case. And when we'll talk about Wolves, he got taken off early. But I think with these strikers, you have to look forward. So if I compare them to a Vardy, for example, he has Newcastle away, Liverpool away, Man City home, Aston Villa away, 4 of his next 5. I wouldn't touch him. Like, yes, he's looking great, but you have to play the fixtures to an extent. You saw Cunha when you had him for a good period. Yeah. Some games he disappointed, other games he hauled. On the balance, he did as you expected him to do. That's how you have to sort of play it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that West Ham Wolves game, Jarrod Bowen stepped up, didn't he? Like, we used to talk about Brian Mbeumo being Brentford's talisman, similar. Jarrod Bowen for West Ham obviously played as a striker, goal and assist, bonus points. He's on the set pieces, he's on pens. He ticks every single box, doesn't he?
He does. And I guess as first a word to Antonio, wish him a swift recovery. And I think what this means is that, yeah, they get to play Somerville and Kudus on the flanks, which actually looked incredible. Like, I like both of those guys in those positions. And then it gives Bowen a little bit of freedom to play up top. And I think it worked. But it was, again, I would caution, they've just played Leicester. They've just played Wolves, which are probably the two good teams that they will get. They have decent fixtures, but it does end. The run does end very soon. So if you have Bowen, very good. You know, you can enjoy his points in Brighton at home and then Southampton away. But then after that, they've got Liverpool and Man City. So I feel like it's a stopgap if you're going for a Bowen.
Yeah, I feel I said a couple of weeks ago, look, I like Bowen and he ticks all the boxes, but do I want to invest $7.5 million in a West Ham attacker? And I look at the team and the output of the team and I'm just not so sure I trust them. You know, they had Everton a few weeks ago. I think it was a 0-0 draw at home. Like, they're a team that don't offer a huge amount in attack. But fair play for those that had Bowen for the Wolves fixture. It's a really nice one. But yeah, you can't expect goals and assists every game with a Lopetegui team that isn't overly attacking. But yeah, Somerville and Kudus are a nice pair behind him. And Kudus obviously, I think, had a 5-match suspension. So him back in the team is huge for him.
It is.
Aston Villa, they had 18 shots versus Southampton. They scored the goal. Ollie Watkins was benched, but I guess John Duran was always going to get a game over this period. Ollie Watkins is 9 million, Praz. Even when he's starting, and that's the vast majority of the time, he's not been super efficient in front of goal. He's been wasteful, and he had such a good season last year. But it feels like we're seeing the Ollie Watkins of years gone by, where offers a lot, perfectly fine, good enough pick, but perhaps lacking that clinical cutthroat finishing.
Yeah, and minutes play a big part in that, right? I mean, you can miss three chances, but if you score one, then everybody remembers the goal you scored, not the three misses. When you play 65 minutes, you miss two, people remember your misses. So I just think it's a case of him not even close to getting the minutes in comparison to his counterparts like an Isak. Even Jackson is getting more minutes than Watkins at the minute. So it's difficult. I think the big plus for Watkins is we saw him take a pen. Not a very confident penalty, but he did take a pen.
Got the hand to it, didn't he?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we like penalties. We like our strikers to take penalties. If he does keep them, it does add a string to his bow. So I am watching this. But at the moment, as an Isak owner and people who have Solanke, people who have Jackson, have no reason to switch to an Ollie Watkins. Not yet anyway. And then we monitor.
Yeah, Ollie Watkins, his penalty record is down there. I was going to say up there. It's down there with the worst, I think, in the Premier League. He's got like something like a 50% conversion rate. So whilst we always want our players taking pens, when I'm an Ollie Watkins owner and I've been there before and he's won the penalty and I'm getting the assist anyway, I've actually been like praying he doesn't take it because I'm just thinking of those minus points. It was interesting to see that after Tielemans had missed one the other week, Watkins did step up and fair play, slotted it past Flecken just about. Although, yeah, Flecken got the hand to it.
Maybe Rodgers takes the next one.
Yeah, we've seen Rodgers taken for the under-21s, haven't we? I mean, how do you feel about Rodgers? Because he's still, I think, we talk about like budget midfielders and Enzo and Ahmad in today's show, but obviously the likes of Semenyo have been great as well, Smith Rowe, Iwobi. But Rodgers, for me, knowing that he's started every Premier League game so far this season, he pops up with goals. I think he's the best eighth attacker in the game still. I'm very happy just setting, forgetting Rodgers.
I don't disagree. Like, I think Enzo, one to monitor. So maybe in 3 weeks, we change our mind. And I think now I've got both Rodgers and Enzo. So I can actually wait and see in 3 weeks, who do I need to change or upgrade to an SA later. But I think at the moment where I am is Rodgers is great. But I don't want to play him away to Nottingham Forest. I don't want to play him home to Man City. And I don't want to play him away to Newcastle. So the next three, I would ideally not want to play him. It's not the end of the world if in your team, if in somebody's setup, they have to. But I would ideally not want to play him. But I do agree. Minute security in a Villa team, sometimes playing 10, sometimes playing off the left, is just good stuff.
Yeah, I've got to give a nod to Bournemouth as well. Another impressive win, an away win. But they're a good attack. I was looking at some of the numbers for sort of big chances, for goals, for XG. And we said earlier, Chelsea were top two in all those metrics. Bournemouth are sort of top three, top four, top five in all of them as well. Like, Bournemouth are a really good attack this year. And not many of us have a Bournemouth attacker. Evan Nilsson has a bit of love. Semenyo has a little bit more, but they're scoring goals, Bournemouth.
They are. They do share it around, though. Like, they, you see Tavernier really pop up. It. Otara comes on and scores the goals. You know, you've seen Kluivert get the penalty. There is no one clear talisman there, and that's where the issue is. So a lot of people may say, hey, you know, Bournemouth is a better attack than Wolves. Why are you buying, Cunha and not Ivan Nilsson? The answer is simply penalties, set pieces. You have to look at individual picks. And that's where it becomes a little bit difficult with Bournemouth. But I do like Ivan Nilsson. I do like Semenyo a lot.
Yeah. Good example there. I think it's a really fair point. I've got them firmly on my watch list, but I haven't gone and bought them because of that share of points. This week's European fixtures, you've obviously made early moves, but most will be, I guess, wait and see. You are looking at price rises and I guess, Praz, for you, you were tight on funds. But with all the most of the top teams in action, if you can, guys, do hold your transfers. We don't know what this week will hold. There's always news. We'll probably hear more about some of the key injuries, like Gabriel as well, which is worth noting. Will we see him for Arsenal on Wednesday night against Monaco? I hope so, because he's been on the bench for a couple of weeks and we need him.
Yeah, we will. And so that basically makes it an even bigger case to hold transfers. Now, for me to say that, as somebody who's already made one, there is context to it, right? I had three free transfers and I've just made the one and I'm still waiting for others to play. But nice. If you can, wait for news, wait for, you know, important updates and react accordingly.
Yeah, guys, make sure you're checking out all those Champions League fixtures. And Praz, I'll let you see us off.
Yeah, and while you're waiting, do not forget to listen to Jules, Kelly and Sam on this week's FPL pod. And if you haven't already, join the mini league. The code is Q7YCO0. Good to see you, Gianni.
Yeah, good stuff. We'll chat again soon. Thanks, guys.
Take care.